It's 2 o'clock, and this is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, February 6th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is about education. It's entitled, "We Have to Stay True to Our Roots. Richland Students Teach, Celebrate Black History at Program," by Valerie Wells, Decatur. The Black History Month celebrated at Richland Community College was a culmination of months of planning and a desire to include a wider audience. Students from the Media Club and the Black Student Association worked hard to create a memorable community event, said Carl Coleman, president of the association. "I'm glad to see as many people out here as we have," Coleman said Tuesday. "We've got college students coming through. We've got sororities and fraternities, which are an important part of college education. It's good to celebrate our history as a family and a community at large." The first Negro History Week was celebrated in 1925, and during President Ronald Reagan's administration in 1986, February was designated Black History Month. "This year, we decided instead of a fair to do an extravaganza and invite students from the community to come out," said Evian Hawkins, professor of African American Studies at Richland. "We also have vendors from different organizations and sororities and fraternities." Students from Phoenix Academy, Eisenhower, and MacArthur High Schools and Antioch Christian Academy attended and were given seats in the front so they wouldn't miss any performances. "Being Black is powerful, and we have to stay true to our roots and come together," said Kawana Johnson, a senior at MacArthur who attended the event. Cardell Ingram, principal of MacArthur, said he wanted to bring students from the dual-credit African American Studies class in particular so they could see Richland's campus in person. "Whenever you can give them a campus experience, that's something we want to do," he said. "We brought as many kids as we could, and we ended up bringing about 50. Richland student Laurelyn Rowe Adams put on a Black History Month event at St. Teresa High School, where she was a student there, and helping plan the event at Richland as a member of the Black Student Association was a good experience, she said. "I wanted to come here and see the bigger picture," she said. "I know that Kiari Page, president of the Media Club, did an amazing job." Page said she wanted to present all aspects of African American culture, especially the arts, and included music, dance, spoken word performances, and visual arts in the event. "We always have a vision to empower everyone, whether it's minorities or anyone," Page said. "We wanted to celebrate Black history in an extraordinary way. It was important to her personally and to other students who organized the event to show pride in who they are and their heritage," she said. "We should be proud because we are doing great things," she said. "I think that's just amazing. To be proud is to have that energy and to showcase that we are great and have the power within. This is a great time for celebrating Black history," said Jermise Sherrod, who teaches English and media and helped organize the event with Hawkins and the students. We've fought so much for so many rights, and we shouldn't take that for granted. We should strive for learning history, teaching history, letting our students know what their foundation is, where it lies, where they're going," Sherrod continued. "We want them to learn and love African American culture." Here is an announcement about meeting the Herald and Review sports staff. When? 6 to 8 p.m. today. Where? Lincoln Lounge, 121 North Main Street. What? Talk sports and share your ideas with the Herald and Review sports staff. Call Justin Kahn at 217-421-7909 for more information. Blast Victim Transferred to Springfield Memorial by Rob Stroud. Sullivan, a woman who was injured in a house explosion and fire Friday night northeast of Sullivan, has been transferred to Springfield Memorial Medical Center. Chief Mike Piper of the Sullivan Fire Department said the woman, who had resided with her family at the home, was transferred on Monday to Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana to the burn unit at the Springfield Hospital for further treatment. The department reported earlier that firefighters found the injured woman outside the structure under debris shortly after they were dispatched at 9:52 p.m. Friday to the scene, 1416 County Road 1700 North, west of Jonathan Creek Road. Later, firefighters found the body of another family member, 20-year-old Jared L. Schrock, under debris. Schrock was pronounced dead at the scene at 12:10 a.m. Saturday by Moultrie County Coroner Lynn Reed. He is the son of homeowners Larry and Ruby Schrock. A family friend has started a Schrock family fundraiser page on www.gofundme.com to help this Amish family with home, hospital, and funeral expenses. Piper said the explosion resulted from a propane leak, but the Illinois State Fire Marshal's office has not made a final determination yet on what caused the leak and the explosion. He said firefighters have learned that occupants of the house had tried to fix the propane leak earlier in the evening, but they could still smell the odor of propane afterward. The explosion leveled the house. The Sullivan Fire Department reported that the blast scattered debris as far as 200 feet from the residence. The structure was fully engulfed in flames when they arrived at the scene. Sullivan firefighters were assisted by squads from Arthur, Bethany, and Lovington with manpower, pumpers, and tankers. Area firefighters with the MABAS Division 26 Technical Rescue Team, based in Charleston, were called to the scene to assist in the search for and recovery of the deceased victim. Developer touts DeWitt Wind Farm to ZBA by Kevin Barlow. Clinton. The push to place a $300 million wind farm in DeWitt County moved into a new phase Tuesday night before a crowd of about 200 people in the auditorium of Clinton High School. It was the first of seven scheduled five-hour meetings before the DeWitt County Zoning Board of Appeals. Tom Zwierczewski, a development director with Tradewind Energy, told the seven-member panel the proposed Alt Farms 2 wind farm would bring several benefits to DeWitt County, including extra income for farmers hosting turbines on their property, new roads, and extra property tax revenue. On the first night of the company laying out its case, Zwierczewski said the company hopes to break ground on the project in the late spring and be in operation by late 2020. This project meets all of the requirements for a special use permit, said James Griffin, a Tradewind Energy attorney. The ZBA will consider making a recommendation to the DeWitt County Board on the program's special use permit application after the conclusion of testimony in the next several weeks. The County Board is expected to consider the special use permit in March. Following the conclusion of the company's presentation, which could come at a second meeting Thursday night, the ZBA will hear from supporters and then opponents of the project. Meetings are scheduled for Thursday and Friday this week, and then February 19th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. All meetings are expected to start at 5 p.m. at the high school. More meetings will be scheduled if necessary. Zwierczewski told the ZBA the project will comprise about 67 individual wind turbines. each no taller than 591 feet in total tower height. The project would spread over about 12,202 acres in Barnett, Wapella, and Clintonia townships. Zwierzynski said a panel of experts will testify to specifics of the special use permit, but ZBA board members had concerns Tuesday about language in the permit which would allow the turbines to be moved up to 250 feet from their specified locations. "It looks like you are taking our codes and fitting them to your needs," said board member Dave Waters. "I am not saying that every one of our 67 turbines is going to shift 250 feet, and many of them will not shift at all," Zwierzynski said. "It is what we call micro setting, which is small shifts after we do research to find out how the turbines interact with each other. We are making sure we have enough flexibility so that if a couple of turbines need shifting, 100 or 200 feet or so," he said. "Without that flexibility, the only other option we would have would be to remove the turbine, and then the landowner doesn't receive the benefit of that turbine." Board Chairman Andy Hedrick also questioned Zwierzynski about non-participating landowners who may suffer extra charges, such as added charges for crop dusting around turbines. "We have designated this project to minimize impacts such as that," Zwierzynski said. "We have fewer turbines and they are more spaced out. I have talked with crop dusters and have heard rumors that some landowners are getting charged more, but I have not been able to verify if that is actually the case. The way this project is laid out, that shouldn't be a concern." Police: pregnant woman hit in argument, by Jalen Cook, Decatur. Police said a 22-year-old woman struck a pregnant woman twice, once in her chest and once in her stomach, during an altercation. A signed affidavit said Decatur police officers were called to the 1700 block of North 28th Street at 6:07 p.m. Sunday. The pregnant woman told police that she and a man were there to meet the arrested woman. The affidavit said the arrested woman and man have a daughter together, and she was meeting them to pick up her daughter. The pregnant woman was sitting in the driver's seat of her vehicle when the 22-year-old woman approached the window. An argument followed, and the arrested woman reached in through the vehicle's window and struck the woman twice with a closed fist, the affidavit said. The pregnant woman told police this happened as she was holding the other woman's daughter in her arms, the affidavit said. Officers said the pregnant woman had a red mark on her chest after the incident, and the child's father corroborated her account. The arrested woman told police that she and the other woman did argue, but denied approaching the window of her vehicle. The affidavit said her boyfriend, who was also at the scene, said he saw her approach the pregnant woman's window and argue with her, but never saw a physical altercation. The arrested woman faces preliminary charges of vehicular invasion, aggravated battery, and endangering the life of a child. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. She was held Monday in the Macon County Jail on $20,000 bond. ADM reports profit. Company shows $315 million gain in fourth quarter, by the Herald and Review. Decatur: Archer Daniels Midland Company on Tuesday reported fourth quarter profit of $315 million, or 55 cents per share. The number was below the prior four-year quarter results of $788 million, or $1.39 per share. This year's earnings, adjusted for one-time gains and costs, were 88 cents per share. The results fell short of Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of four analysts surveyed by Zacks Investment Research was for earnings of 92 cents per share. Looking back on the full year, the team did a great job focusing on the items we could control as we continued innovating to serve customer needs and advancing our strategic priorities, ADM Chairman and CEO Juan Luciano said. Our effective management through complicated and rapidly changing trade, geopolitical, and market conditions helped deliver an impressively strong 2018 that included solid profit growth, improved results on investment capital, and higher cash flows. Chicago-based ADM is Decatur's largest employer, with its North American headquarters here, along with large corn and oilseeds processing operations. The agribusiness giant posted revenue of $15.9 billion in the same period. For the year, the company reported profit of $181 billion, or $3.19 per share. Revenue was reported at $34 billion. The company said it has 32,000 employees in more than 170 countries, 450 crop procurement locations, 270 food and feed ingredient manufacturing facilities, and 46 innovation centers. Splashpad, Other Projects Get Grants, also by the Herald and Review, Decatur. Three Mencken County Park projects, including a new splash pad in Mount Zion, will be funded by state grants announced Tuesday. Governor J.B. Pritzker's office announced the three projects, totaling $758,400 in funding as part of a list of 89 across Illinois. The grants, totaling $28.9 million statewide, will provide up to half of the money for each project to be combined with local matching funds. The Macon County projects are $309,200 to the Village of Forsyth to acquire land for a sports park, $75,000 to the Macon County Conservation District for cattail pond improvements at the Rock Springs Conservation Area, $374,200 to Mount Zion for the Fletcher Park Splash and Pad development. The Rock Springs and Mount Zion projects will be paid for through the state's Open Space Land Acquisition and Development, OSLAD, program, which receives its funding from a percentage of the state's real estate transfer tax. Money for the Forsyth project will come from the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund. Village leaders have long planned for a splash pad in Fletcher Park, with private fundraising efforts currently underway for years. As of Tuesday morning, Mount Zion has raised about $65,000 for the project, said Village Administrator Julie Miller. The grant from the state will require a 50-50 match, so Miller said the coming months will be used to raise the additional $310,000 necessary to make the splash pad a reality. Obviously, we have a ways to go, so we are going to have more fundraising efforts in the coming year to get us to that $374,200 level, she said. Once the village receives the grant money, which is expected to be this spring, they will have 24 months to build the splash pad. Overall construction time is expected to be about 1 year, Miller said. Those interested in contributing to help fund and splash pad, help fund the splash pad, can contact the Community Foundation of Macon County at 217-429-3000. Forsyth Village Administrator David Strohlstand said the village applied for the grant money with the idea of developing a sports park and community center. The 70-acre site would be off County Road 20. Although plans are still being processed, he said the project will begin in phases once the village board has the money in hand. But the grant was just awarded last week, Stoll said. Goodwill Industries to open new store in Clinton. Thrift store joins Tractor Supply in former Walmart site. By Scott Perry. Clinton, land of Lincoln Goodwill Industries, will join Tractor Supply Company in the former Walmart building in Clinton. We're very excited about expanding into Clinton, Sharon Durbin, Goodwill CEO, said in a news release Monday. Clinton is a wonderful community, and we expect our retail store to provide great values for local residents, while also providing them with an opportunity to donate used items that directly help us provide career training and employment opportunities locally. Announced plans have the Goodwill store opening in late spring or early summer. Tractor Supply, which will fill a majority of the building, is expected to open in late summer, officials have said. Walmart closed the 35,000-square-foot Clinton store in July, putting 70 employees out of work. The Goodwill store will provide new and gently worn clothing for men, women, teens, and children, in addition to houseware, shoes, accessories, jewelry, and small appliances, and a special boutique section. The store also will serve as a donation drop-off point. It never hurts to have another retail business, said Clinton Accounts and Finance Commissioner Tom Edmonds. We are very fortunate that we have at least two good thrift stores in town now with Encore and Lovett once more. They are both very good, and thrift stores are always good for folks, and we are thrilled to have another one coming. The Goodwill store will be the 15th retail location in central Illinois for the Springfield-based group. Other area locations are in Bloomington Normal, Champaign, Effingham, Lincoln, Springfield, and Vandalia. Missing from the list is Decatur, said Patrick Anderson, vice president and marketing coordinator for Land of Lincoln Goodwill Industries, said hasn't gone unnoticed. We're anxious to get into Decatur, Anderson said, noting a search for a retail location has been ongoing for the past couple years. We think we can have a pretty large impact. Anderson said the retail locations serve as a launching point for the group, providing the necessary funding and connections for its services. Land of Lincoln Goodwill Industries is a nonprofit organization that provides job training, employment placement services, and other community-based programs for people who have a disability, lack education or job experience, or face employment challenges. Kevin Barlow contributed to this story. Shooting Suspect in Custody by Jalen Cook. Sullivan, a 32-year-old Mattoon man arrested Tuesday morning after a late-night shooting in Sullivan, police said. In a Facebook post, the Sullivan Police Department said officers responded to a home invasion with shots fired call at a residence about 11 p.m. Police said officers and deputies with the Moultrie County Sheriff's Office found one person with a gunshot wound at the scene. The person was taken by ambulance to a local hospital. The shooting victim's condition was unknown Tuesday afternoon, police said. Police said Alvin Booths was identified in connection with the shooting and was arrested in Mattoon at 8 a.m. The Moultrie County Detention Center could not immediately be reached to provide information about his charges. A call to the Moultrie County State's Attorney's Office about the case was not answered Tuesday afternoon. Illinois State Police Department of Criminal Investigations, and State Crime Science Services were notified of the incident, police said. Sullivan Police requested the state police lead the investigation. Police said the investigation was ongoing as of Tuesday afternoon, and an update was unavailable. Robbery charges dismissed by Tony Reed. Decatur. Charges of beating and robbing a deaf Decatur victim have been dismissed against Brian O. Cunningham. Cunningham, 25, had pleaded not guilty to charges of armed robbery, aggravated robbery, and mob action. Those charges were dismissed at a hearing Friday in Macon County Circuit Court. They were dismissed without prejudice, which means they could be refiled if new evidence becomes available. Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said Monday the case against Cunningham collapsed because of repeated inconsistencies in the story told by the 46-year-old victim, who is profoundly deaf. Scott said there is no doubt the victim was beaten and robbed on May 4, 2018, during which his $1,000 hearing aids were ripped out of his ears. He was punched and had a gun held to his face before being robbed of $400 in cash. He was treated at a hospital following the attack. But Scott said the victim told different versions of what happened in a series of interviews with an assistant state's attorney and a victim advocate. There were just multiple inconsistencies with what was originally reported to the police, added Scott. Bid for victim's phone records denied, also by Tony Reed, Decatur. A lawyer's bid to probe the phone records of a gunshot victim to look for evidence that might weaken his client's link to an attempted murder case was rejected by a judge Tuesday. Andrew M. Wessler, defending Decatur man Zachary D. Batson, wanted to see phone records from a woman who was shot and wounded three times during a home invasion the night of September 20, 2017, in Decatur's Park City mobile home community. Wessler said also wanted records from her family members and said he wanted to find out if their lifestyles, rather than the fact the family knew Batson, as the prosecution claims, led to their home being targeted by home invaders looking for drugs and money. Wessler's pointed to police reports outlining that drugs, three pipes used for smoking illegal drugs, and paraphernalia found in the home pointed to a lifestyle that might have invited crime from any direction. But Macon County Circuit Court Judge Thomas Griffith granted a motion by Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott to squash the phone subpoenas. Scott had argued that he could see no relevance to invade the privacy of the victim, who was age 52 when she was shot, and her family. I think I understand your argument, Griffith told Wessler, and I don't really like this phase, but I think this is a fishing expedition at best. Batson is pleading not guilty to attempted murder, armed home invasion, and residential burglary. He is free on $200,000 bond. Two other defendants in the case, Michaela M. Melton, 19, and Damon L. Davis, 20, have pleaded guilty and been sentenced. Davis admitted he was a shooter and was sentenced to 30 years in prison in September on charges of attempted first-degree murder and home invasion. Fire damages body shop, blocks traffic. Decatur. Crews with the Decatur Fire Department responded to the 900 block of West El Dorado Street late Tuesday. Acting Battalion Chief Matt Hines said firefighters arrived to find thick black smoke coming from the back of the building at this location. A small fire inside was extinguished in less than 30 minutes, he said. No injuries were reported. And that's the end of part one. I'll be back with part two after the break.